This is the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, featuring your host, Jenna Erlandson.
Hey guys, and welcome to episode 18 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast. I'm Jenna, and we are all traveling this faithful bridge together. These episodes are just my documentation of the things that God is showing me as I search to understand what faithfulness really means. You can find this and all other podcasts at botfpodcast.com. You can also connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast. Firstly, I want to apologize for how long I've taken between episodes. It's been a crazy year. A new baby, an answer to a longtime prayer. My husband finally got a job as a pastor, which led to a move, and then finally, in the last couple of weeks, the death of a very loved family member. Through it all, this podcast has been on my mind, and God has been working more in my heart. And one thing I've always struggled with is my identity. In all of these changes, God has really made me shift how I view my own identity. I'm nowhere near finished in this process, and this side of heaven, I think it will always be something I struggle with. But these next three episodes are my starting point in figuring out this incredibly important understanding on where my identity lies. A lot of what I'm going to talk about here is probably mostly going to resonate with women because, well, you know, that's what I am. But there are still some universal truths that we all deal with. That being said, I'll never have enough experience in the world through a man's eyes, so I'm not really going to go there. But men, if you want to listen to maybe see what women internally struggle with, or I guess mostly just me because this is about me mostly, but feel free to listen and maybe you can understand us a little bit better. So many of us women put our self-worth in the hands of someone else. Sometimes it's a man. It may be a specific man like your husband or a boyfriend, or it may just be how you want them to view you in general. Another area could be our children. Do they behave well? Do they love you? Are you giving them everything you should? Do you live up to the other moms? But in Beth Moore's book, So Long Insecurity, I was smacked in the face when she said, "Why would we put our self-worth into the hands of someone who's oblivious to the power they have over us?" Giving these people or ideals the power of owning your identity puts it in a delicate state where someone who doesn't even know they hold it, or worse still, they do know and they don't care for it well, can easily shatter it and walk away, leaving you to pick up the pieces. Other times, our identity is focused on the things we're not. I'm not as bad as so-and-so, at least I'm not into drugs, I refuse to be just like my mom, etc. However, this leaves us in a state of constantly justifying, comparing, and emptying ourselves instead of focusing on the good and improving what needs to be worked on. It only sets us up for deep shame if we ever fall short of our standards for ourselves. Likewise, when we base our identity on comparison, we're never really seeing the whole picture. The life we see of others is always edited, airbrushed, and usually has most of the ugly truth cropped out of you. I need to stop at this point and talk about a specific issue that I personally deal with myself often, and that's beauty. And this is not me saying that I think I'm insanely beautiful and would be so devastated if I lost it. Quite the contrary. It's this weird drive to look better because deep inside I feel the skinnier I am or the smaller the number of my pant size, that it makes me more valuable. I'm not really sure what sparks it. Maybe it's the media. Maybe it's the trauma of being called fat when I was a kid. Maybe it's my perfectionist personality. But this is one area where I've always struggled a lot. One thing that hit me while I've been focusing on this topic of identity is that God does not put a standard of beauty on us. What he does do is set us to be his. That's it. No requirement of Hollywood quality beautiful, which is honestly mostly fake, size 2 jeans. I may only know a couple of people who would ever fit that bill, or whatever physical aspect you aspire to. The side note is mostly for myself, because it's a much needed reminder in this deep trek through finding my identity that beauty is not my identity. Now that we're on this page of misplaced identity through feeling inadequate, I want to discuss two major issues that come from it. The first is pretty self-explanatory, envy. It's a pretty easy jump to go from feeling lacking to being jealous of those who have exactly what you wish you had. And we'll talk about this more in a later episode, but I want you to stop and think for a minute. Is there someone you're really jealous of? someone with a better job, a nicer house, who's more attractive, wealthier, someone like that come to mind? If so, that may be a clue into what you're placing your identity into. Seriously, I want you to take a minute and think about what gives you that little twinge, no matter how small, of jealousy when you're scrolling through that social media or Facebook. I'll be totally transparent here. I do when I see the perfect pictures. My Facebook picture is literally 6 years old from when I was pregnant with my first kid, because that's how long it's been since I feel like I've had a picture that's worthy of being publicly presented. Or is it when other moms seem to do everything perfectly, especially for me on days when I've totally messed up? What about those perfect postpartum bodies that's fresh on my mind right now? Or about when people are successful at something you're trying to be as well? These are definitely indications of some things that I need to be careful not to put my identity in. And like I said before, we are never seeing the whole picture. I'm also going to be kind of blunt here. When you start putting your identity into those things, they become our idols. An idol is something that distracts us from admiring and worshiping God the way that we should. We'll talk about this also in a later episode, but this is something very important to figure out. One way to tell if there's something you're making into an idol is to ask yourself, is there something we're holding on to that if we lost, we would lose our identity? How do you define yourself? These are not inherently bad things. Actually, usually they're great things. But one thing I've noticed in my studies for all of these concepts is that Satan loves to take good things and distort them or pervert them from their original purpose. So pretend you're meeting someone for the first time and they ask you to describe yourself in a few words. What comes to mind? A job or a title? Like a nurse, a mom, a pastor's wife? Or a character trait? Independent, curious, caring, artistic. Or a talent or hobby, like I'm a musician, an actor, fashionista, a podcaster. What if something crazy happened and you lost one of those pieces of you forever? Like you're a singer and you damage your vocal cords permanently. You somehow lose your spouse or children. Some medical event changes your personality. Do you know of anyone who's lost something that they use to define their identity? An athlete who had a career-ending injury, a beauty queen who just doesn't look the way she used to, the loss of a job that they put their heart and soul into, or even something natural and good like being a stay-at-home mom but your kids grow up and leave. A person I think of who lost everything in 1 second was Johnny Erickson Tata. When she was 17 years old, she had a diving accident that caused her to become a quadriplegic. Undoubtedly, it caused her to question, losing all of her abilities and mourning the future she had dreamed of but would never get to see. In her search for finding new identity and value, she put this quote in her biography, Johnny, an Unforgettable Story. But that's the same for everyone if we let society determine our value, Steve explained as he sat down at the piano bench. We always lose when we evaluate ourselves according to someone else's ideas or standards. And there are as many standards as there are people. A jock measures you by your athletic ability, a student by your brains, a study by your looks. It's a losing battle, he said, striking a sour chord for added emphasis. We have to forget about what people say or think and recognize that God's values are the only important ones. The part of the quote that really stood out to me is, if we let society determine our values. We are so good at letting something or someone decide who we are and what we're worth. Where do these come from? In my personal experience, misplaced identities come from peers, from media, misplaced passions, insecurities, and expectations. It's so important for us to remember the list of what we are not defined by. Number one, labels. Some labels we proudly give ourselves and claim: mom, wife, girl boss, crunchy, fitness buff, foodie. Others are bestowed upon us, often by peers in school, and they're really hard to shake. Misfit, loser, dweeb, washout, jock, academic, popular. Not all of these are bad things, but how much we claim these affects decisions that we make as we try to live up or dispute these labels. Number two, we're not defined by what we consume. I've heard the expression, you are what you eat, with the idea that the food you consume controls how your body behaves. And the same could be said about your mind. The things that you use to occupy your mind affect the way that you think and act, music, books, movies, culture, and art can all influence positively or negatively our emotions, reactions, hopes, ambitions. We can easily trap ourselves into these ideals that aren't even ours and not what we were meant to be. Number 3, comparisons. I struggle with this one a lot. It's so easy to get into the pitfall of putting yourself into a place in line, a designated spot in the world of humanity. Sometimes, especially with the role of social media, I feel less than. My self-confidence dive bombs as I see perfect figures, clean houses, amazing success both in parenting and in the working world. And when I see people who are so much better than me, I get so defeated that I often sit there and wonder, why do I even try? But just as often, unfortunately, pride gets the better of me. I am ashamed to admit that I sometimes think, well, at least I don't do that, or I'm so much better at this. And since we're already using cliches, we may as well bring in pride comes before the fall. But remember, these do not define us. Whether you are crashing in despair of not enough, caught in the lie of superiority, or dealing with the fallout of our pride taking the best from us, it's not who we are or how we are truly defined. Number 4, we are not defined by others. This one is incredibly hard for me. I am a perfectionist, people pleaser, and peacemaker. Look here, I'm bringing those labels right back in. I feel the most comfortable when everyone is happy. There's no conflict, which means I often just acquiesce to expectations. A big thing I personally battle with is constantly trying to have a good standing in my relationships, letting my desire for peace be my deciding factor in choices and actions. Now let's stop here for a minute and let me clarify. I'm not saying that all of things are bad, ungodly, or sinful. I just want you to think about what is leading your identity, what is causing you to have these parts of your identity focused. So continuing on with others defining you, you are not defined by how people talk to you. This can be racially charged or be based on your age or perceived experience, whether you're a man or a woman, or any way that makes you feel inferior or even superior. In the same vein, you are not defined by your accomplishments. You are not worth more as a human if you receive bonuses, raises, blue ribbons, scholarships, or prestigious titles. You are especially not what the media thinks you should be. The unrealistic beach body keeps the house immaculately clean, number one at school or job, can cook a full meal, and always have happy children all the time. And when I say this out loud, I realize how ridiculous my expectations of myself are. If you hear anything that I say this whole time, I want you to hear this. You do not need to be afraid of not being enough. This verse fits perfectly here. See what great love the Father has lavished on us, that we should be called children of God. And that is what we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know Him. 1 John 3:1. I believe that first half of the verse with all of my heart. So why do I let that last part affect me so much? If I am claimed as a child of God, why do I care if the world doesn't recognize or value me for the person that I am? Because we have someone out there whose biggest desire is to steal our identity. And I'm talking more vicious than wanting our money. He wants us to put ourselves into the hands of literally anything else but God's. Like we talked about in the episode, Beware the Prowling Lion, Satan is constantly watching for whatever he can to drag us away from that path toward God. In John 10:10, Jesus warns, "The thief comes only in order to steal, kill, and destroy." But he also, at the end of this verse, has this glorious promise. I have come to see that they may have life, life in the fullest measure. In the book Identity Theft, a group of women write to talk about the ways Satan distracts us from our true identities. They point out 3 main categories that he does so. First is the enemy of the world, our temptation to conform, to fit in, to not feel uncomfortable or ostracized because we're different. Second is the enemy of the flesh, our desire to glorify ourselves instead of God. And this one is so painful because no matter how great or talented you are, you will always fail and fall at some point when your humanity is seen. The last is guilt or shame. Satan tries to trap you with the chains of your past, hoping that you'll forget that God has already seen, still 100% loves you, and paid the full price for those chains to fall away. God is not ever surprised about who we are. It does not change how he feels about us. We don't have to worry about him finding out that one secret about us that we don't want others to find out, because he already knows about it and he always will love us. You may be like me and constantly be thinking, I'm not enough. If that's all we focus on, then it's depressing, because of course it's true, because we're human. But we're looking in the wrong spot. Jesus is enough. Jesus is enough. And that's what matters. One of the biggest and best parts about finding your identity in Jesus Christ is that he is the one thing we just can never lose. If our identity is protected and defined by him, it can never fall into identity theft. So now we're kind of figuring out what we're not. The next couple of episodes, we're going to focus on what are we? 1 Peter 2:9-10. But you are not like that, for you are a chosen people. You are royal priests, a holy nation, God's very own possession. As a result, you can show others the goodness of God, for he called you out of the darkness into his wonderful light. Once you had no identity as a people, now you are God's people. Once you received no mercy, now you received God's mercy.
This has been episode 18 of the Bridge of the Faithful podcast, entitled Identity, What We Are Not. For show notes, go to botfpodcast.com/episode/18. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/botfpodcast.